debating the environment and Labour, so Labour and the Green Movement. And I'm really pleased to introduce on the panel, we've got Michael Jacobs, who used to be the General Secretary of the Fabian Society and did a lot of the work on the greening of Labour back in the day that I think has really built a foundation for the work that we've done at the Fabians. We've also got Joe Twyman, who is the Director of Political and Social Research at YouGov, and YouGov have worked very closely with the Fabian Society over the last couple of years, exploring that issue of how we keep the environment on the agenda in a time of political economic austerity and difficult political times. Ben Stafford is the Head of Public Affairs at WWF UK, who's been another great partner of the Fabians Environment and Citizenship Programme, including this conference, but also some of the earlier work that I mentioned. But we're going to kick off with Mary Cray, who is the Shadow Secretary of State for the Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, and someone who's also worked very closely with us on the programme so far. Thank you.
Thanks, Natan. And let me preface my remarks by saying I'm just a callow politician trying to get Labour elected at the next election. I wanted to reflect on some of the things that Will had said and let you know about some of the things that we're doing. First of all, I think Will's right when he says he talks about the rights framing of an issue. And they are experts at it, and there is a script, and the script is followed very clearly all the time. And I think the environment and climate change have a problem because nobody actually knows what they are. They're abstract nouns. And climate change is a bit like death, because if we all in the room sat and thought about death, we'd probably be quite scared of it. But most of us live our lives not thinking about death, but thinking about our lives. And climate change is a bit like that. If we thought about climate change, or rather the consequences of climate change, we'd actually be terrified. The thought that our children might suffer food shortages because of droughts in Ukraine and America, the world's breadbasket. The thought that we as elderly people might have to be rescued from our houses by firefighters in the event of a flood. The thought of more and more people being subject to the horrors of wildfires. We saw 19 firefighters killed in the United States only this week as the temperature and the climate becomes more extreme. I think these are all things to be quite scared about. But because of the scientific reluctance to ascribe cause and effect to climate change and the more extreme and more volatile weather that we have, it is difficult in the kind of media narrative to constantly say, is it caused, is it caused? Which is what the sort of simplistic three-minute soundbite two-way interview always wants to come down to. So when I try and talk about the environment, I try not to talk about the environment. I try and talk about the forests that the Conservatives wanted to sell off. I try and talk about the coasts, which the Conservatives have failed to establish marine and coastal reserves around, and where the dream of a coastal path around Britain is under threat because the Tories really don't think it's important, don't see it as an essential part of rural infrastructure and tourism infrastructure. I try and talk about the rivers, whose dredging budget has been cut by 44% in the last over the spending review period, which could be contributing to some of the flooding that we're seeing, and the pumping budget as well, which is, you know, it's so boring, isn't it? Pumping budgets. Who thought, you know, when you go into politics, you don't think you're going to be talking about pumping budgets. But these are the things that protect us from the unexpected consequences of extreme climate change, and they are absolutely vital, and it's my job to try and make them a bit more sexy. So I just want to say a couple of quick things. First of all, we have launched two policy documents. I was here literally 2 weeks ago talking to the Chartered Institute of Waste and Environmental Managers about Labour's resource resilience and security document. It's on the yourbritain.org.uk website, and anybody who wants to can go up there and put a comment on it. When I last looked a couple of weeks ago, nobody had. And I don't know whether that's my problem or everybody else's problem, but what it's trying to look at is how we make better use of the paper, aluminium, glass and plastic that we collect and try and stop exporting it to China And try and keep it in this country, reprocess it in this country, and make sure that our producers and manufacturers have a steady stream of resources and materials so that they aren't constantly fighting ever-rising global commodity prices, and they actually have some sort of security of supply if we're going to rebuild and secure our manufacturing industries. The second document I launched on Wednesday, it's our policy document, it's called Feeding the Nation. We're going to do this in two parts. We're going to do a second document a bit later on in probably the end of the year. This is about creating a resilient, growing food industry. I think the horse meat scandal showed us some of the vulnerabilities and problems in our food production, our audit and our supply chain, and the vulnerabilities that exist. But the food manufacturing sector is our biggest manufacturing industry. It is characterised as low wage, low skill, all of the things that Will was talking about, and yet we need lots more people to go into it. We need a race to the top, not to the bottom, on wages and skills in that sector, and we aren't going to be able to do it without the help of some very big food companies and some very big manufacturing companies. And we want to make sure that we can also grow and export some of the great craft traditions that we have in this country, whether that's Craster kippers, whether it's Scottish smoked salmon, Welsh lamb, Scotch beef, all those protected foodstuffs that come from specific places and have specific craft traditions linked to them. So that is also on the website. And you're again, I hope you've seen something about that in the press, because we launched it. We did a soft launch on over the weekend, and then there was coverage in The Telegraph, The Mirror, The Guardian. I did an article for HuffPost, so it has been out quite a bit. And so I think food poverty is a big part of environment, waste and resources. Flood insurance, the government says they've got a deal, but they haven't. All they've got is the start of a very long process that will require, and I quote, unprecedented levels of cooperation between government and industry. And that's from the chairman of the Association of British Insurers. So if he's worried, I think all of us should be as well. And just finally, on the Agricultural Wages Board, this is back to the low-wage rural economy. It was a very big deal for... I did a lot of visits in places like Somerset, Dorset, Staffordshire, Gloucestershire and Worcestershire, and I think it demonstrated the sort of ideological differences that exist between the Conservatives and the Labour Party on a very simple issue. Here was something that had nothing to do with paying down the deficit, cutting public debt. It was a private sector measure that transferred directly over 10 years, will transfer £260 million from the pockets of workers into the pockets of employers, through lost sick pay, lost holiday pay, and lost overtime. We didn't think that that was right, and we didn't think that that is the way to attract and encourage new investment, new recruits into a rural economy, a low-wage economy. People out there in all weathers, we saw with the cold snap recently, the loss of the livestock that was happening in the hill farms. Very difficult, our most dangerous industry. We don't think that that's any way to attract new recruits to it. So we also thought that that money would also go out of the village high street, so it has an on cost to the rural high streets as well. So just to sort of conclude, I don't think we can talk about the environment. I think we have to talk about trees, places, people, things. I'm sure Joe's going to tell us that the environment is really low down the list of people's concerns. But if they walked outside their houses and the rubbish hadn't been collected for 2 or 3 weeks, as it hasn't down in green-controlled Brighton, I can tell you people very soon get very agitated about the environment on their doorstep. And what they think about it in abstract terms is quite different to how they think about it in their local parks, their local green spaces, their local ability to get an allotment, their local pleasure in picking local fruit, foraging, whatever it may be. I think Labour did a lot in government, not just setting up the Marine and Coastal Access Bill, but also giving people the right to roam across our countryside, a right that they hadn't had in 2,000 years. So I'll leave it there and wait to hear what the panel have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary, for that whistle-stop tour through the shadow DEFRA brief and some of the politics of the environment that Labour will be pursuing. And Joe leads very nicely into you telling us this question of what do the public currently think about green issues?
Thank you. I'm going to have to begin my bit by saying I'm afraid I've damaged my voice. And so if it fails completely, I will be moving to the medium of interpretive dance for the second half of this. Who cares about the environment? Who's interested in the environment? Who thinks the environment is an important issue? Well, when you ask it in relative terms against other issues, fewer than one in ten. Mary was right then. If you're lucky. Sometimes it's fewer than 1 in 20, depending on the news agenda. And it doesn't really matter how you ask the question. You can ask what's important for you to vote at the next election, what's important to the country as a whole, what's important to you as your family. If you're lucky, you'll get 1 in 10 people saying that. Now, at this point, in the past, people have shouted, yes, but local environmental issues are important. People don't understand the issues. They just need to think about these things more. If only they were told about it. I mean, this is something that affects the whole planet. This is the last chance we have. We're the generation that can make a difference, and we're fighting the right-wing, well-funded organisations and the media against us. All that is true. I'm not disagreeing with any of that. What I'm saying is that, despite all that being true, when you ask people, relatively, compared to other issues, it's just not important. And when you look at something like the Green Shift in Canada in the 2008 federal election instituted by the Liberal Party under Stéphane Dion, you'll see that in the odd occasions when environmental issues are brought to the fore, it tends to be associated with defeat. Now, I'm not going to say that was necessarily one leading to the other, because there was lots of stuff going on. But again, this is something that we need to consider. So, if you like, that's the problem. What about the opportunities, to just turn things around in management speak? I would say that the main opportunity that the environmental movement has is to make these issues about the economy. Now, whether that's the economy in broad terms or specific terms, the economy is something that, rather than 1 in 10 people caring about, 8 out of 10 people care about. It's the number one issue in this country by some distance, and has been for some time. So if you can frame and present environmental issues, green impact, etc., in terms of the economy, you will gain traction. Secondly, it can be used to address broad narratives surrounding the party generally. You just need to look at how David Cameron quite happily jumps on the back of a husky, or whatever it was that he did, in order to present the Conservatives as the kind of party that uses dogs for transport and not just for chasing foxes. And so these things do feed into broad ideas that people have about parties. And then you also have the issue that actually people aren't interested in the minutiae of environmental policy, but they're also not interested in the minutiae of a whole lot of policies. And so, you know what? Go for it. Go for it, because it's not going to make a difference to most people at the election, the differences between specific issues and approaches when it comes to the manifestos. So go for the radical thing, and save the planet. So that's all I have. I'm afraid it's not important, but I'm also happy because it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. So some good takeaway message there. Make it part of the economy and go for the radical thing, because people aren't paying attention to the detail. So some good ideas for policy review there. Ben Stafford, could you tell us a bit more about your view from the WWF position?
Thank you. Yes, sir. Good morning. I think I should probably start with a mea culpa, because David Cameron's husky-hugging trip have been mentioned, and I'm afraid it was WWF that took David Cameron to Svalbard.
Why have you taken me?
I said, well, you know, we can probably negotiate that, Mary. It's very cold there. I'll get that out to start with. I mean, I know it's been much sort of denigrated since, but I think it does actually... At that time, David Cameron was putting the environment on the agenda of the Conservative Party. Now, it may have been a cynical move. It may be that the government has not followed through with those issues, but the fact that the environment rose up the agenda, the fact that the government at the time was talking about climate change after things like the Stern report actually meant that the environment was probably a much more live political issue then because there was political interest in it than it has been since. So that's to start with a slight mea culpa, but not too much of one. I won't go too much into the matter of what the public think about the environment because Joe's talked about that in some detail, although... While it's true that people don't say that the environment is a thing that's necessarily going to motivate how they vote, people tend to be broadly progressive on environmental issues. So they do think that climate change matters, and they do, despite what you might imagine if you read the Daily Express and the Daily Mail, which I imagine most people in this room don't, they do think that it's important to develop wind energy and renewables. And I think one important lesson for Labour, therefore, and particularly so in the aftermath of the UKIP surge that we saw in the local elections, is not to get blown off course by some of the vociferous climate scepticism that we've seen, some of the sort of rhetoric and anger around environmental issues, and to give a lead. And I think that also means that Labour needs to be sceptical about the fool's gold of fracking, which is very much in the media at the moment. It's not likely to have anything like the economic impact that's suggested. It's not likely to be able to be exploited in the way or to the extent that is suggested in some of the media. And in the long run, we're not going to be able to continue getting fossil fuels out of the ground. So I think that's another area in which Labour should be giving a lead now. In terms of the doorstep offer, Joe has already said, and Mary indeed has said, the environment is an abstract issue. So how do you sell it on the doorstep? How do you relate it to people's daily lives? It may be also that environmental NGOs like WWF are partly a victim of our own success. I mean, there are millions of people in this country who are members of environmental groups. Some people may therefore think that the environmental agenda is being looked at quite nicely by those bodies and that government doesn't need to do anything. Of course, we would profoundly disagree with that. We think it's good that we've got strong environmental campaigning organisations in this country, but we need a lead from government too. I think both Mary and indeed Michael, who will be speaking to you in a moment, have written about the value of place and of relating the environment to people's everyday experiences. I think it is hugely important that we protect local green spaces, woodlands, parks, clean and safe rivers and clean air and so on. But we do also, as Joe has suggested, need to relate the environmental debate to what people are thinking about at the moment. And as he said, it is principally about the economy. So I think Labour needs to have a vision of how to deliver what Ed Miliband has referred to as the Green Industrial Revolution. And just to say a little bit about the green economy, as you probably know, it is one of the few areas of the economy that's grown in recent years. Overall, the economy has been stagnating, but in 2011, the green economy grew by almost 5%. It already employs more than 3% of the workforce in the UK. Many of the biggest infrastructure projects that are coming forward are green infrastructure projects. So it's a success story that Labour can tell, both in terms of economic growth, but also in terms of the jobs implications of what it means. And I think Labour should also weave the green thread through other economic policies. So housing is going to be a big issue at the next election, without a doubt, particularly as the rungs of the housing ladder are getting further and further apart. And it's very welcome that Labour is talking about building 100,000 new affordable homes. It could be even more of a vote winner, I think, if those homes are all low carbon and energy efficient as well. So helping the environment and cutting bills at the same time. I just want to conclude with a couple of quick points. One is that environmentally concerned voters are looking for somewhere to go now. Many are very unhappy with the coalition. And of course, the Liberal Democrats are to some extent tainted by association with the coalition. They were once seen as the very progressive environmental party. A lot of voters don't think that anymore. We can debate whether that's entirely fair. I mean, the Lib Dems have done some good green things in office, but overall, that's not the way it's perceived anymore. So there is a good chance for Labour to make an offer to those voters who are looking for somewhere to go. And the last thing that I want to say, and although this may not seem like a vote winner, is that Labour needs to say something about Europe, because actually the next significant national election in this country is not the general election in 2015, it's the European Parliament elections next year. And I think it's deeply concerning that we may have a debate in advance of that election that's all about who can out-skeptic whom, rather than talking about some of the positive things we've got out of our relationship with Europe. And environmental advantages are one of the most obvious things there. I mean, our rivers and beaches are cleaner, our air is less polluted, our wildlife is better protected because we've been active and positive members of the European Union. So I think it's important that Labour is making that case, not saying that the EU is a panacea in terms of the environment. I mean, aspects of the common agricultural policy have not been good for the British countryside, but it's important that there is, I think, a positive debate about Europe ahead of those elections next year. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Ben. And I think three really strong points to draw out, and hopefully we can explore more in the Q&A. But I think the reminder that the green economy is one of the success stories we have in the UK here when other sectors have been flatlining. I think the opportunity for Labour in terms of green voters looking for a home. And I think you're right, the European success story that kind of gets forgotten amid all the UKIPing that's going along at the moment in British politics. So just to bring our panel to a close before the discussion, Michael Jacobs, the former General Secretary of the Fabian Society, in many ways the forefather of the Environment Citizenship Programme at the Fabians. Over to you.
Thank you very much. That makes me sound very old, which may be true. I'm going to say a few things that have already been said, which is the penalty of being the fourth person, but I wanted just to start by just drawing this out to Labour's relationship with the environment more generally. I think we're entering the third phase of the relationship between Labour and the environmental issue and the environmental movement, at least in recent years. If you want to go back further, which I do in a piece that I've got with Green Alliance soon, you can have others. But just over the last 20 years, I would describe the first phase as the phase of the opposing magnets. Labour and the environmental movement were the north poles of magnets, which, whenever they got close to one another, tend to repel one another. Labour people saw Greens as middle class, pulling up the ladder behind them, not interested in the living standards of the poor. And Green people tended to see Labour as wedded to the same industrialist, consumerist, materialist philosophy of capitalism and the right. And there was repulsion between them. The second phase was the phase of Velcro, in which Labour adopted environmental politics and policies at various times when it suited them, when they were talking to CERA or to the Fabian Society, but then tore it off again when they were talking about the real world and real politics and so on. Part of my role in the Fabian Society, one of the things I did when I was General Secretary of the Fabian Society, I wrote a pamphlet called Environmental Modernisation. Putting environment and modernisation too was a naked attempt to get Tony Blair to read it and to be interested. And indeed, he did read it. That was mainly the audience. It sort of had a target audience of one, and everybody else who read it was a sort of bonus. He then made a speech about the environment, and for 6 years after the speech did almost nothing. And that was a typical period of Velcro politics when we could do it when we were speaking to particular audiences, but we tore it off again. We're now into the environmental politics of the loom. These metaphors are completely random, in which we need to weave the green thread through the entire tapestry of Labour's narrative into the warp and weft of our politics, so that the green element, the environmental element, is absolutely central and integrated. Why do we need to do that? I'll give you four reasons. The first is because it matters. The World Bank report released recently, which showed what a four-degree world would be like, and we're, of course, on trajectory not to a four-degree world, but probably a five- or six-degree world currently, showed the cataclysm of catastrophic changes. Those are the World Bank's words that we are facing over the next 10 to 15 years, not the next 50 years, the next 10 to 15 years, if climate change is allowed to proceed unchecked. And the wider resource scarcities, which are now emerging in many parts of the world, so not just climate change, but water and land, forests, marine ecosystems, and so on, make the environmental crisis absolutely central to our sense of what the world that we hope Labour will be helping to govern after 2015. And we should never forget that this is the reason we need to do this. We can do it for lots of other reasons too, but the environmental crisis is our core reason for acting. Secondly, because, as Ben has said, this agenda is now central to our economy and to economic policy. The low-carbon sector used to be a fiction invented by Greens. It was the thing that we used to hope would one day emerge in response to the kinds of policies that we wanted. It is not a fiction now, it is a reality. Over 1 million people are employed in this sector. As Ben has pointed out, and more importantly, as the CBI has pointed out, a third of all the economic growth that occurred in the British economy in 2011 came from environmental sectors. A third. Over the last 20 years, we learned to think of the creative industries not as the preserve of Loveys and others, but as a crucial part of our economy. And even conservative politicians now will talk about the creative industries as core elements of the economy. We now need to learn and to talk about the low-carbon environmental sectors as core parts of our economy, because that is what they are. They are no longer fictions. They are a growing sector, and they are critical to jobs, not only in high-tech areas, but also in relatively low-skilled areas all around the country. So they have a contribution to make. They are making that contribution throughout the country. And they are exemplars of the kind of public-private policy-making that we need. 71% of the infrastructure pipeline that the Treasury has just published is in low-carbon sectors, largely in energy, generation and transmission, and in public transport. 71% of the infrastructure, which is currently in the pipeline, is in the sectors that we care about. But what we know is that we need policy which supports that infrastructure and which also drives the innovation in British companies, so that the suppliers of that infrastructure and all the technologies which go with it can be British. At the end of the last Labour government, we had an embryonic industrial policy, which we need to revive and to make much more coherent than it was then, and frankly than it has been so far in the policy review. But the low-carbon economy then acts as an exemplar of the kind of reformed economy that we need to generate growth back. Thirdly, because, as Ben has said, housing policy will be an absolutely central part of the next Labour government's programme. The desire to build hundreds of thousands of homes is completely correct in the wake of a housing crisis which is now completely out of control. But that has to be done in an environmentally sensitive way. The homes themselves have to be energy efficient and water efficient. They have to be surrounded by green space so that people feel as if they're living in a real place and not just in the kinds of rapidly built homes that we did last time we tried to do this in the 50s and 60s. And we have to do it in a way which consults incredibly closely with the people whose communities those houses are going in. And that is a real challenge for Labour. We've been good in the past at centralised planning. We've not been so good at the kind of decentralised planning which really involves local people in creating communities. And we will simply not build these houses unless we do that. They won't get built because there will be too much opposition to them. So there's a tremendous challenge to make our housing policy a truly environmental policy of place that involves local people. And lastly, because we shouldn't fear public opinion in doing this. Joe is absolutely right that if you ask people what are the most important issues facing you, your family, or the country, people put environment very low down the list. Well, of course they do, because the most important issues facing us are the economy, are unemployment, are poverty, are our health system, our schools, and so on. None of us would disagree with that. The question is, if we act on it, will people support us? And here the Fabian's own research suggests that they will. The Fabian's last year asked the question, which of the following statements comes closest to your view? Protecting the environment is fine in the good times, but we can't afford it while the economy is struggling. 29%. We can save the planet and the economy both at the same time by investing in green technologies. 54%. This is not an unpopular agenda. This is an agenda, moreover, which speaks to the swing voters that we most need to win. In seats where we are challenging Lib Dems in particular, and in Brighton, the Greens. So this is not something that we should be frightened of from the point of view of our voters and public opinions. And of course, that message, the message of that poll, is exactly the message that the environmental movement has been proclaiming for the last 7 or 8 years, and that poll suggests that we've won that argument. So we can now go out, it seems to me, to win this agenda. Let's get out our looms.
Thank you very much for that, Michael, and for the rest of the panel. So.